and give it a minute to kick in, please. There we go. Okay, we are recording. We are back in session. We are recording. It is currently 12:18. We'll do a roll call to make sure everybody is back. Dr. King,
present.
Dr. Bastillo,
here.
Mr. Leone,
here.
Dr. Cornwall,
here.
Mr. Greer,
here.
Mr. Barton,
here.
Ms. Richardson,
present.
Ms. Cardoza,
present.
Ms. Crowley,
here.
And I'm Judy Chevius, and Mr. Harris, Assistant Attorney General, is also with us. So we are back in session. I did speak to Mr. Hosterman. He is very congenial, and he's happy to reschedule. He understands. He's done this a lot. So we will table that and then reschedule that presentation at a later meeting.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we're on agenda item number 9, and we've got a few, but a couple of them are grouped together with Ms. Anne McLellan representing. So do you want to do the talk about the three with Anne on the call, or should we go in order?
I believe we can move through the initial eval for 9B21-22, Dr. Bettinger.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and read this script for initial reviews just so that we can get that done and covered for the rest of these. So this is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. Let's see, there are 4. Cases for the board to consider. The matters will be heard by the board pursuant of its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I'll provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all the cases which we will hear today and will not repeat for each one. We'll first begin with introductions. I'm Dr. King. I'm the board chair. Do you want to go ahead and go? Well, I can just keep going. And I'll ask the board members to introduce themselves.
I'll call your name, please. Dr. Bastillo, please state your name and your position on the board. You're muted. Dr. Bastillo, you're muted.
Karen Bustillo, PT Vice President.
Mr. Leone.
Giovanni Leone, Professional Member Secretary.
Dr. Cornwall.
Mark Cornwall, Professional Member.
Mr. Greer?
Joshua Greer, public member.
Mr. Barton?
Joshua Barton, public member.
And we'll introduce staff quickly. Ms. Richardson?
Mindy Richardson, board investigator.
Ms. Cardoza?
Veronica Cardoza, administrative services officer.
Ms. Crowley?
Monica Crowley, licensing administrator.
My name is Judy Chepius. I'm executive director. Dr. King.
Thank you. For those participating in initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it's necessary to refer to patients, please do so by initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary from the investigative report from its staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to make address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, and if they are have an attorney or counsel present, we'll ask them to speak as well if they want to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask those speaking not to take the time repeating information that the board has already received and reviewed. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes or so. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy, after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior, will be removed from the meeting. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to deliberations, we will ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing the case amongst ourselves and request that you not interrupt that process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary actions such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to a formal hearing. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that the initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it's important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action, please feel free to ask those. However, if you have a number of substantive questions, it may be more appropriate to simply move the case to an informal hearing. Thank you. So we will go first into case 2122, Eric Beidinger, PT. So Mindy, do you want to give us a review of the case?
Yes. Board open complaint 2122 after receiving a complaint from a patient, JB. JB alleged that Dr. Beidinger inappropriately delegated an initial evaluation and treatment to a student physical therapist and that he had no contact with JB at any time. Dr. Beidinger was able to review the investigative report and that their written response to the investigative report was provided to you. The potential allegations are identified as ARS 322446, failing to supervise assistive personnel, but I also, through the investigative report, have identified several other potential violations for your consideration. The evidence in this case shows that Dr. Beidinger did not have any interaction with patient JB before, during, or after his visit. A student was allowed to determine and complete all aspects of informed consent, initial evaluation, and treatment without Dr. Beidinger's in-person observation at any time. The issues that surfaced in this matter are related to informed consent. There is no evidence to support that the patient JB was duly informed of his right to refuse treatment by a student. And in his supplemental written response to the investigative report, Dr. Beidinger states that it is the responsibility of the patient to have requested to speak with him if he was uncomfortable with any aspect of care being delivered by the student. The second issue was related to the level of supervision that's required for physical therapist students who are considered assistive personnel by statute. There are two things for you to consider. I included as Exhibit 7 a substantive policy statement related to supervision of students, where it articulates that students may participate, quote, end quote, in the initial evaluation process. The other thing for you to consider is what is the community standard related to the supervision of PT students. Based on Dr. Beidinger's statements in the interview and response to the investigative report, allowing students to independently perform evaluations and treatment without his in-person involvement is his usual practice. And finally, the evaluation performed by the student was incomplete as outlined in the investigative report. Dr. Beidinger, by signing the evaluation of JB, knew or should have known that the evaluation was incomplete. This case is for your review.
Thank you. Mr. Beidinger present?
Yes, I'm here.
Great, okay. And then is patient JB present?
Yes, I'm also here.
Okay, great, thank you.
And Dr. King, my name is David Williams. I'm counsel for Dr. Beidinger also, so I'll make a brief statement when it's his time to talk.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Okay, so do any of the board members have any questions at all for Mr. Beidinger? Mr. Beidinger, do you want to address the board and make a statement by any chance?
Dr. King, I can take the lead role on this. We submitted a fairly detailed response to the investigative report on August 28th. I'm not going to belabor that and repeat that what's in it, although I do want to submit or highlight a few things. Based on the student physical therapist's clinical training at that point, he would have been, in our opinion, independently capable of completing evaluations of the patient. Dr. Beidinger, in his schedule, which we did provide to the board, sets aside a full hour to be available for a consultation, whereas normally if it was him doing the direct evaluation for the patient without a student being available, he would simply allot a half an hour. Dr. Bittinger reviewed the clinical notes. He reviewed the patient's chart with Mr. Moore before he saw the patient. My understanding is that the patient gave verbal consent to Mr. Moore to proceed with an evaluation, that he was aware that the patient, that Mr. Moore was a student, a physical therapist, although that's our understanding and maybe not as clearly articulated, that Dr. Bittinger was certainly available and could take over the evaluative process during the consultation. That said, Dr. Bittinger recognizes that there's maybe some uncertainty or maybe his misinterpretation of what the board's standard of care is with respect to supervision of students. And so he's taken the initiative himself to actually sign up for a CE course through the clinical instructor program. I believe he's scheduled to do that in early June. I believe, and Dr. Bittinger can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that's a 9-hour CE course that he has signed up for. Body Central, who is Dr. Bittinger is an employee of the practice. He doesn't own the practice. And so he is working with the ownership group to update their intake forms to make those aware. And I don't have those updated forms or we would have presented them to the board with our response, it's my understanding that Body Central and its ownership group are updating the intake forms to let the patients know that if they want to have a student involved in the evaluative process, that will not happen. And then Dr. Bittinger also recognizes that going forward, he's going to be involved in every face-to-face interaction and have the student there to assist. As far as the clinical charting issues, I think those are addressed in our response. And so I don't know that I necessarily need to belabor that. It's our opinion that the resolution of this does not rise to the level of some sort of unprofessional or grounds for disciplinary conduct. And given Dr. Bittinger's recognition and affirmative steps to remediate these issues, it's our position that at worst we would request a dismissal, but at worst an order of non-disciplinary continuing education, which again Dr. Bittinger's already taken the affirmative steps to undertake that process and he signed up for that course. So I don't have any other specific comments. I think we've fairly addressed that in our written response, but if there's questions, we'll certainly be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Board members, do you have any questions that you need clarification on for to move on this case off or speak with patient JB?
I have a question for Dr. Bittinger. Dr. Bittinger, can you just kind of explain what is your process when it comes to students as far as if they're going to go and do the evaluation, like where are you during that time? Are you with another patient? Are you kind of just sitting in the background watching? Like what does that process look like?
So the process depends on obviously where the student is at in their clinical internship. In this scenario, Mr. Moore's scenario, he had been here for about 2/3, about 9 weeks of his clinical, his final clinical. I was not seeing other patients at the time. I was back in the office, available for any questioning. It's also our standard or my standard that I talked to him at least 2 times during the process. So after the subjective interview, Mr. Moore and I talked about kind of what the plan would be going forward, what tests he would want to do, as well as kind of what his differential diagnosis was, what he was thinking, as well as after doing the objective measures, we also discussed plan of care, what his findings were, appropriate HEP, et cetera.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question for patient JB. Mr. JB, do you mind answering a couple of questions?
Thank you. Not at all.
So I just was curious at any time during the introduction to the student PT who would be doing your evaluation, did he identify himself as a student?
He did immediately, actually. And he
okay, great.
Clarify if I can, he pointed across the room to Mr. Bittinger, who was with another patient at the time, and said, he's busy with another patient, so I'll be seeing you today.
Okay. And did at any point you felt like you had an opportunity to decline evaluation by a student PT?
At that time, I didn't feel it would be necessary. I understand that students need to learn also, and I'm supportive of organizations that encourage that. So I thought I would, allow it to proceed. And quite frankly, it wasn't until the short duration of the appointment with no interaction that I saw between the student and Mr. Bittinger occur. And I left, within a few minutes and, contacted the company to try to indicate to them that I was not interested in coming back, and received a bill from them and contacted the billing department, who reinforced their policy that it's okay for students to do these evaluations on their own. That's what triggered my complaint.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions or? Okay, should we go into deliberation? Okay, board members, what are you thinking?
I mean, I'm thinking that it probably would make sense to send this into a formal hearing.
Formal or informal
hearing, sorry.
Okay.
There's just some information here that doesn't add up. One side of it is, going through the transcript here, the appointment went for 15 minutes, patient JB was given 4 exercises and then sent on his way. And then on the other side, it's, the eval was taking place after the subjective and history was gathered. There was a discussion between Dr. Bittinger and the student. Same thing happened again after the objective measurements. It'd be nice to have a little bit more information as far as just corroborating the total time frame of what took place in there that day.
So your motion is to move it to an informal hearing?
Yes.
I'll second that.
I would ask the board members if they're going to add the additional potential violations that I cited in my investigative report.
Let's see.
So Josh, for your, it's ARS 32-2043H, for each patient on each date of service, the physical therapist must provide and document all therapeutic intervention that requires expertise of a PT. 32-2044-4, engaging in the performance of substandard care. R-424-30-301-E, regarding patients' rights to make decisions regarding examination.
Doesn't sound like R-424-301-E. Would be relevant because it sounds like patient JB said that he was fine with proceeding with the initial eval with the student at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But all other statutes in there, I would agree with having as part of the informal hearing.
Okay. So Judy, just to clarify, ARS 32-2044-6. And then with the addition of ARS 32-2043-H. And then ARS 32-2044-4. Yeah. Any other discussion?
This is Josh. I agree with the motion. I also agree with JB's comments. We want to have a place where students can learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like to, the licensee can do whatever he wants, but I think this case is really begging for some kind of consent agreement to get it resolved on terms that everyone can agree to. Because I understand what happened and it's kind of unfortunate what happened, but I do agree with JB's comments. Hey, this is how we learn. That's unfortunate that it happened this way. So.
I'm inclined to agree. You know, as I was reviewing this case, I recalled that it wasn't that long enough ago that we were actually discussing this very issue as to whether students were assistive personnel or not. There seemed to be some confusion, and so I'm a little. I agree with Mr. Greer that, you know, this seems like it should be something that should be able to be resolved, especially given the fact this is a necessary part of the training process for physical therapy.
And Dr. King, members of the board, I'd be more than happy to work with Ms. Richardson and Mr. Williams on perhaps coming up with a reasonable consent agreement for your consideration that takes in it, that reflects the discussions this afternoon. Are you thinking something in the area of continuing education as an appropriate outcome in this matter if we're able to memorialize findings of facts and conclusions of law?
Yes, something like that.
I'd be in support of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't feel like the Dr. Bittinger did have failure to supervise. He was in the room. And so the student was getting on-site supervision as stated, you know, in our practice act. And the student could have asked at any time, which is, you know, their responsibility as well to, if, you know, if he had questions or concerns about this particular case. I've gone back and forth on this one in my own mind really quite a bit before we got to this point, because we do expect our students, you know, minutes before graduating to be able to complete a full evaluation by themselves. Because the day after they pass their MPTE and law exam, they can do that. And so my concern is the busy clinic and all of the moving pieces that may have shortened this person's, the JB's evaluation and treatment, and since some of the lack of you know, oversight by Dr. Bittinger. So I would like to resolve this in the same way that everyone else would.
Yes, because part of the, if you look at the assessment tool, assessing whether a student passes clinical education is whether they are deemed entry level, which means they can independently and autonomously practice as a generalist.
Yeah. And handle a full patient load. Mm-hmm. And so there's, that's a critical piece of their passing.
So we have a motion and a second to move to an informal hearing. So let's vote on that. And then we will, depending on how that vote goes, move to the next step.
Dr. King, if I might ask a clarifying question, and maybe this is more directed to Mr. Harris, I'm unclear about, I understand the board has a need to seek additional information. I guess what I'm unclear of is the written materials that have been submitted. I don't know what additional information would be gleaned from the board in an informal hearing. I'm certainly open to discussing with Mr. Harris some sort of consent agreement. I don't know if it's a consent agreement for non-disciplinary continuing education, which is what I had proposed, or if it's something, a probationary period for consent, for which would obviously be disciplinary at that point, and then we'd have to cross that bridge. And so it's a little unclear to me when a consent agreement is being thrown around, if it's simply a non-disciplinary consent agreement for continuing education or if it's a consent agreement for discipline by probation with continuing education. Those are two different things in my mind. And again, I guess I don't think this rises to the level of probation. I think, especially given the uncertainty around the idea of what is assistive and supervisory, and it seems like even members of the board have questions about that issue as a policy statement. It seems like there's some confusion in the broader community, practitioner community, on this point.
I guess I can probably clarify, because I was the one that originally stated I'd like to see a little bit more information. I'm looking more along the lines of a sign-in sheet that shows what time JB showed up for treatment, documentation that shows, you know, what time did the patient actually leave the treatment, or if he was given exercises. I don't know if an electronic system is utilized for that. What time was that HEP actually put together? Just something to corroborate the time frame that we're talking about here, because, you know, I'm hearing that the appointment only lasted 15 minutes. So then does that mean that within 15 minutes, the student took a subjective, went and spoke with Dr. Bittinger, went back, did objective measurements, went back to Dr. Bittinger and spoke with him on that? I just like a little more information on the time frame.
And that simply may be a factual dispute that's in play. Is Dr. Bittinger's position is he set aside an hour, which is based on the schedule. The amount of the objective evaluation, subjective evaluation, the evaluative process could not have been done in 15 minutes unless there are a lot of steps being skipped, which I don't believe occurred. So I think that's indicative of Dr. Bittinger's position. But again, that's something that that's a factual issue that I don't even know would be resolved through an informal hearing, other than just you're going to hear everybody repeat what they've said today.
Under oath.
And additional information.
That's why we have an informal hearing, is all those factual disputes. We can't do it today. So.
Right. And for your information, Mr. Williams, an informal hearing doesn't necessarily mean it leads directly to disciplinary action. It just needs more information under oath. Reassessing, a little more time to actually look at the facts and the investigative report and complete the process.
And I appreciate that, Dr. King. And I just, the only reason I'm asking for the clarification initially is Mr. Harris had said a consent agreement, which I didn't know if that would be discussed in lieu of going forward with an informal interview, or if we're or an informal meeting, or if we still want to do an informal meeting, and then the byproduct of that would be a consent agreement after that. That's what was, and maybe this is part of the deliberative process, and I hijacked your deliberative process, and for which that I apologize.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Williams, I would suggest you discuss those with Mr. Harris and you can make an agreement before the hearing, you know, more power to you.
As a follow-up to that, Dr. King, Mr. Greer, members of the board, my understanding based upon Mr. Greer's comments was that the motion was to remand this to an informal hearing. If the parties were able to come up with a consent agreement, the board would be open to reviewing it. My understanding, though, that consent agreement would be for probation. Clearly, if the board thought that this was appropriate to dispose of with a non-disciplinary order for continuing education, the board has the ability to do that at this meeting.
Right.
And so the fact that they're moving this forward, my understanding was that it would be a consent agreement that would reflect a probationary period, which would include a finding of unprofessional conduct of some sort.
And I'll tell you, Mr. Harris, I hadn't thought about it that far in depth. You know, I was hoping that you and Mr. Williams sit down and see if you can come to something that you'd bring to us. With your approval. That's what I was thinking. I hadn't gone as far as thinking, yes, this has to be probationary. This has to not be probationary. You know, looking at the facts of the case and, you know the board probably as well as we do, what makes sense. So that's what I was thinking.
Appreciate the clarification and we'll do.
So we have a motion and a second to move this to an informal hearing with some additional allegations. So, Judy, do you want to restate the motion, please? And we can vote on that and then go to the next steps if we need to.
Yes. It's been moved and seconded to move case 2122 Eric Bittinger PT to an informal hearing to include possible violations ARS 32-2044-6, ARS 32-2043-H, ARS 32-2044-4, as found in the investigative report. Dr. King?
No.
Dr. Basia?
No.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
No.
We have a tie vote.
Motion failed.
Mr. Harris, in this case, do deliberations continue? Do we revote?
Maybe a new motion, different motion.
Okay.
If I could, I'm reading through these, the facts and the allegations again.
Who's speaking? Oh, sorry, Josh. I couldn't see it was you. Okay, sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Okay.
I think it's a very good thing that Mr. Bittinger is doing. I appreciate what Ms. Bastillo has stated regarding the supervision, and I think given that, and if the question really is whether or not this was a kind of overly short evaluation done by a physical therapy student who's not yet under our jurisdiction, I would think the supervision was there. I wonder if it's appropriate to move for a non-disciplinary order for CEUs. Mm-hmm. It does seem to me that I don't disagree with Mr. Greer. We could dig up more evidence. Maybe some of those facts change. Maybe they don't. But if we wind up where we are now, I'm concerned we're going to spend another quarter of a day hearing the same testimony again and not be particularly closer. And I don't know that, given the statements of the board, I wonder if maybe we're better off just moving forward and ordering some CEUs to be done and moving forward in a non-disciplinary fashion. So I guess I should make a motion. So given that, I would move that we make a order for continuing education, ordering Dr. Bittinger to complete the 9-credit course that he has already signed up for. Maybe an additional course on documentation.
I'll second that.
For discussion. I'm just curious, and I apologize. I need to actually ask a little more questions. I can't recall, what was the 9-credit-hour CEU course? What actually was that? And what's the content?
So, Dr. King, as I understand, and Dr. Bittinger can clarify me if I'm off, it's a credentialed clinical instructor program level 1 through the American Physical Therapy Association. He's scheduled to take that on June 11 and 12.
Perfect. That's exactly what I was going to suggest that we identify as the credentialed CI course. So, okay. And time frame that it needs to be completed by, Josh?
I think if we gave him 12 months to complete it, that'd be fine.
And a documentation course, did you say?
Yeah, I think maybe one additional hour of documentation just to address the concerns that Mr. Greer raised about the possibility that this was an overly kind of constrained or shortened assessment.
I would hope that it also includes supervision.
That's why I was wondering if you would be willing to entertain the longer documentation course typically includes some billing as well as supervision and making sure that documentation is really clear of supervising assist personnel as well. Yeah, so I wondered if you might consider a 6-hour documentation course as opposed to one.
I'm open to that. I'm just a little. That's an additional. That would be bring our total of 15 hours, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm comfortable with that.
I'd be comfortable with that. Maybe we allow him to count some of that towards his continuing education.
Even that was going to be my question.
Just because of the number
as well.
Ms. King, would you be comfortable if we said maybe half of those credits could count towards continuing education?
I would. I think the credentialed CI course could certainly, you know, lend itself to the 2022 renewal CEUs. I'd leave it to the board to vote on that, though, as part of your motion.
Okay. So I would amend my motion to just do that. Let's do those two courses for a total of 15 CEUs, half of which may count towards the 2022 renewal CEU requirements.
And then, Karen, do you?
I'll agree to.
Are you okay with second? Okay. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, let's call a vote.
Okay, so it has been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education to include the 9 hours of credentialed clinical instructor course and 1 hour of documentation to be amended to include an additional is it 5 hour? No, we're taking away 1 hour documentation. We're amending it to 6 hours. That documentation course that includes supervision and billing, and then allowing half of the total credit to count towards CEU requirements for renewal.
That sound right, Josh?
That's correct. Yes.
And does that renewal? If the course is taken ahead of time, the renewal credit that can be claimed would be for the 2022 renewal, or are we pushing this out to 2024 renewal credit?
I don't have a particular preference either way. I believe we should be able to write the order not specifying which.
It wouldn't be in the 2023 renewal time period. It would have to be for this one.
24.
It would be for the current 22 because the new time would start September 1st of 2022.
And when was the clinical instructor course? What was the course date?
June
of this year.
June.
Okay.
June 11 and 12.
Okay. Then yes, you're absolutely right. It could count this year. My apologies. Okay, so we are let me reread this. It's moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order for continuing education to include 9 hours of the credentialed clinical instructor course and amended to include an additional 6 hours of supervision and billing and documentation, allowing half of the credit to count towards CE requirements for renewal. Coursework can be completed online, must be pre-approved by staff, and that's it. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Just one quick clarifying question. For the pre-approval requirement, does that also need to be done for the clinical instructor program course? If it does, that's fine. It's a short fuse for him to take that class, so.
That would be approved. It's APTA.
All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your time, members of the board. Have a good day.
Yep.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye. You too. Okay. We are at agenda item 9C. Nick Luke, PT.
Let me just check with Ms. McClellan. Ms. McClellan is the attorney representing the next three cases, 21, 26, 27, and 28. Ms. McClellan, are you still able to stay till 1:15? You're on mute.
Hola. You'd think by now I wouldn't do that anymore. I can stay
I'm going to stay this to see this through for them. So I let everyone know that my afternoon deposition, I might be logging on a bit late.
Okay. And I think I can provide a brief overview that relates to all three cases, if that's okay with the board members, a general overview. About 2 weeks ago, Ms. McClellan requested that these cases be considered for a consent agreement for non-disciplinary order. And she provided in each of the three cases her reasons for that, which are pretty similar. I responded by saying it was something the board would need to consider. I had not teed these up for investigative review for another couple of months. But given what she had provided, I went ahead and did what I call an expedited review of all three cases. What that means is that I did not, in addition to these cases were originated out of a case previously that you previously adjudicated, Susan Marker. I did not request additional documents or records when I did this expedited review. The only additional information that you have over and above what was in the case for Ms. Marker was the response by each of the respondents. So each of these cases are on in and of themselves their own case. They had their own potential violations that were cited, but I did not request any additional investigatory information to draw my conclusions in the investigative in the expedited investigative reports. So with that said, should we go ahead and proceed with 2126, Nick Luke? As I mentioned, in this particular case, the potential violations were identified in the case 2037 Susan Marker, which this board has previously adjudicated. The board alleged that Mr. Luke provided treatment beyond the point of reasonable benefit, failed to supervise physical therapist assistance, and failed to adequately document. The potential violations were ARS 32-2044-6, 2044-20, and 2044-22. This case is for your review and consideration of Ms. McClellan's request for consent agreement for non-disciplinary. You also have the option just to ask for me to continue with the investigation and do a full investigative report, should you so choose.
Thank you. Does the board have any comments initially from reviewing the materials that the limited investigative materials that Mindy submitted? Do you mind? I don't know if this is the time, but at some point, do you mind if I give just a brief sort of explanation of why I made the request, or is that something you will want later? Just to make sure I put out there that I'd like to give a brief explanation.
A brief explanation would be great. Thank you.
Sure. So thank you for taking the time to consider this. I know it's not the usual process that you follow, but I feel like this is a bit of a unique situation. For background, the complaint was initiated against Mr. Luke as well as the next two agenda items because a patient, RW, submitted a complaint against another physical therapist, Susan Marker, who was at the same practice as Mr. Luke, Ms. Evans, and Mr. Johnson. And her complaint was that Ms. Marker had injured her neck and back, neck and shoulder area doing a procedure. I don't know if that's going to ring any bells for everyone. And the complaint was open because in looking at the patient's full chart, Mr. Luke was also a treating physical therapist that the board felt there was some overlap in the issues unrelated to the injury. And then the two PTAs who were involved in that same care. So the entire sort of world we're dealing with is this patient RW and her set of medical records. The board did a full investigation with Ms. Marker's case, including interviewing Ms. Evans, who's another one of the licensees who's tied in. She's on the next agenda item. And so sort of the entire world of documents that you would need are in front of you. They are the same set of medical records for this same patient. The only sort of distinguishing factor between Mr. Luke and Ms. Marker are he wasn't as involved as long or as many times with this patient's care as Ms. Marker, and he was not involved in the incident that allegedly caused the injury. And then for the two PTAs, they were brought in sort of related to the same set of medical records for potential supervision issues and documentation issues. The reason that I asked the board to potentially expedite this process for these licensees is I think it's important for the board to have consistency when they're looking at cases that are so closely related that the outcomes make sense with each other. And because Ms. Marker's case was initiated earlier and was being investigated at the time the complaints were open against the other licensees, her case was resolved months ago already, and these licensees' cases haven't been resolved yet. But I believe that the evidence should indicate that the outcomes make sense to be the same, especially because for Mr. Luke, who's the other physical therapist involved, he didn't cause any injury, and he's taken the initiative to complete several, many hours of continuing education. And I hope that the board recognizes the fact that all three of my clients are coming forward and presenting to the board saying, hey, we want to take responsibility that if that's what you found against Ms. Marker, we want to accept sort of the same conclusions that you reached in that case because they should apply equally to us. And so that's why they are coming forward and taking proactive to the board saying, can we have the same outcome as her, given it's the same set of patient records, the same patient care, we're working in the same practice area, et cetera? Because the case, your outcome in Ms. Marker's case was to issue a non-disciplinary consent agreement. You required her to have 12 hours of CEUs, 6 on documentation, and then 6 related specific to orthopedic evaluations and treatment because of your concerns you had about whether she caused that injury or whether the treatment she provided was inappropriate given the patient's care on that particular visit. And given that Mr. Luke and the other PTAs were not involved in that visit relating to the injury, that's why we have proposed a non-disciplinary consent for each of them that requires 6 hours of CEU on the documentation portion, which is the finding that you had against Ms. Marker. So what I wanted to just explain is I understand that this is not your usual process, but similar to the case that you just heard, I think hopefully you have enough in front of you that you can conclude that the non-disciplinary consent is appropriate for consistency among these cases that are all so closely interconnected and related, and for fairness for them. And because you already have all of the world of documents you'll need in front of you, plus the responses from each of the licensees. So we're asking you to make that consideration now rather than pushing this off for a few more months for them and having them come back for an informal that we think should have, out of fairness, the same outcome that you consider for the expediency for them and for you as the board, best use of your resources to accept, hopefully, their offer that they are willing to take responsibility in the same manner that Ms. Marker did through a non-disciplinary consent and complete those CEUs. Now, Mr. Luke has completed, as I said, I think approximately 10 hours or more of CEUs. And so we're hoping that for him, you'll accept those. I know I'm addressing them all together, and I apologize for that if that doesn't make sense for the record. But the Ms. Evans and Mr. Johnson have also taken some education courses. Mr. Johnson hasn't submitted any CEUs, so there would be none for you to count for him. He would need to go out and get approval and submit those. And Ms. Evans did submit some CEUs, but it wouldn't be enough for the 6 hours. And so they're offering will follow the normal process of us presenting them to the board staff, getting approval, seeing what counts and what doesn't, and for them to not count those towards their renewal of their licenses. And that was
thank you for your time.
So thank you very much. I move that we offer a board order for a non-disciplinary continuing education in hours of six hours that covers documentation, supervision, and there was another one, right? It's the typical 6 hours that we do, okay, which I think covers documentation, supervision, and billing. Thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, if Mr. Luke has, if he's taken those 9 or 10, if the board can, we'll look at those and say, yes, those cover the topics we want, and I'm okay counting them. Okay. But we want them into supervision, billing, and
documentation.
Second.
It looks like Nick Luke might have a question. We hadn't had the chance to talk with him at all. So, Mr. Luke, would you like to say something on your own behalf? If you're speaking, you're on mute.
Can you hear me? Hello, thank you for having me. I just wanted to clarify that the continuing education units that I have completed have pertained to documentation, CPT codes, and more recognition as to what each individual code operationally means. And it has been an accumulation of 14.75 hours, all with MedBridge and Rick Gawenda.
I mean, that sounds pretty good, but I would like to have a little bit on supervision, but supervision of assistive personnel and physical therapist assistants, but otherwise that sounds pretty good.
Would you be open to then accepting the hours that he already did for documentation and coding? And then if you were thinking of 6 hours, maybe him needing specifying the amount that he needs to do so for supervision so that he knows, do you want, you know, of the six, two to be for supervision, or of the six, one to be for supervision, or how you see that division playing out?
That's a good question, but it's difficult to answer. They tend to cover them all together. So I would say that we can certainly count those for half of the six. And if he can find a 2-credit course for documentation and supervision, great. But more than likely it's going to be 3.
And he's done, his 14.75 are both documentation and billing. And so I don't know.
Okay. All right. So I'm correcting myself. So whatever he can find in supervision.
And then just a point of clarification, would these CEUs count toward 2022 renewal? Typically the answer is no, so I'm just asking you, Mr. Cornwall, if you...
Yeah, typically we would, but it's so close to the renewal date. I'm assuming he already has something. And so I would say let's count him towards renewal. So if he's got 14 already, then he only needs 6 more and for the whole thing. So maybe he can take 6 of the... All right. Just yes. I think we ought to let him count them.
So just excuse me, a point of clarification. So we're going to require, as part of this non-disciplinary consent agreement, 6 hours to cover documentation, supervision, and billing. But the 14.75 he's already taken is going to count for half of that 6. But then it's going to count towards renewal as well.
That's what I was thinking. So
yeah,
maybe the second has a different idea. So
yeah, I don't know.
Harris, do you have a point?
What did you say?
I think Mr. Harris wanted to say something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Dr. King, members of the board, thank you, Dr. Cornwell. And maybe I misheard, but what I heard was a non-disciplinary order, 6 hours in the areas of documentation, supervision, and billing. Mr. Luke has already indicated that he's completed more than sufficient hours in supervision and billing. So what we're looking at is maybe perhaps 2 additional hours in the area of supervision.
Yes.
And with that, your motion would be that he would be able to claim all 6 hours in satisfaction of his as renewal requirements?
Yes.
Thank you.
So for discussion, I just, you know, this whole conversation started with Ms. McClellan talking about how important it is for the board to be consistent. And accepting these word renewal is absolutely not consistent with anything we have done. So I'm just going to tell you, I'm not comfortable with that. I think that it's very inconsistent in what we've done in the past and would much prefer that we stay with seeing these as non-disciplinary. However, a result of having an issue come before the board, that this education is to help him be a better provider and documentation and supervision and not count toward his renewal for his license in 2022.
I concur.
I'd agree. I'd be more comfortable with that as well. At this point, he should be pretty close to having his 20 hours anyway, renewal that starts July 1. So, you know, he has 14 hours he can count that we have nothing to say about. And so I would like to move or have this look at 2 to 3 hours of documentation that includes supervision.
So let me just clarify. We have a couple of motions, though, right now. If we could just address Dr. Cornwalls, please.
So, well, maybe this will make it easier, maybe not. But I'll amend my motion so that it will not count.
Your motion counts. You're amending your motion so that the CE doesn't count towards 2022 renewal.
Correct. Yes, okay. Thank you.
Second.
All right.
And thank you. And Dr. Cornwall, is your motion currently amended to just 2 to 3 hours of supervision and documentation, or is it the full 6 of which we will count 3 of his existing? Because it'll matter for what he turns in.
I think it's to the 2 to 3 hours or something like that.
Okay.
So then, just to be clear, Dr. Cornwell, the non-disciplinary order would be for 2 or 3 hours of continuing education in the area of supervision?
Yeah.
Is it 2 or 3, though? Could you?
Well,
a minimum of?
Minimum of 2. Well, but as I remember, there's a course that often people take, covers both, and it's about 3 hours.
Right.
That's kind of where I'm coming from. So let's tell you what, let me amend my amendment, to be 3 hours.
In the area of supervision.
Okay? Correct. And that'll probably include some documentation that we'll have to just live with.
And the second?
Yes.
And is everybody clear on the new motion? The amended motion?
Yes, but I don't want to muddy the waters, but I'm gonna. So in the draft consent agreement from Ms. McClellan, it states that he's requesting the board's non-disciplinary order to require 6 CEUs in the area of documentation. So we're reducing what her recommendation was to just 3. Is that right?
Well, we're modifying that. And that was her recommendation, and we're saying that it needs to be super, he needs to have some supervision content. So.
We're coming from the perspective that he's already taken 3 hours of the 6 within documentation and billing, and what we're missing now is the supervision.
Right.
Yes.
Don't hate me for this, but, you know, since there's been this discussion on consistency, in the past, mm-hmm. what you would have done would have been just to issue a non-disciplinary order for 6 hours of continuing education.
Yeah.
Mr. Lewick would be able to whatever CE documentation that he believes satisfies that. And typically it would be in the areas of like 2 hours in documentation, 2 hours in supervision, and 2 hours in billing. We would leave it up to the licensee, though, to submit whatever document, you know, CE coursework that he believes satisfies that requirement. That is what you've done in the past. And you mm-hmm. may want to just consider starting over.
I agree, because that's exactly what is in this mark, is in Ms. McClellan's draft.
Okay. I'll withdraw my motion.
Thank you.
I'm happy to submit the consent after your vote so that the board doesn't have to do it, where you want the CEUs to say supervision to insert that language. Okay. Just so you know, since I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, I think we'll the motion's been removed, and Karen, you removed your second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So, Mr. Cornwall, do you want to?
No, I'm not going to try a fourth one.
All right. I'm going to make a motion for a non-disciplinary consent agreement that includes 6 hours of CEUs around documentation, billing, and supervision that is not applicable to the 2022 renewal CEU requirement that has 12 months to be completed.
Second.
And they can be completed online.
And Dr. King, members of the board, just to clarify, was that a consent agreement or just a non-disciplinary board order?
A non-disciplinary board order.
Thank you.
I don't know which way. It doesn't. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whichever is the easiest. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you second, Karen?
Yes. So are we saying now, because Dr. King, you said 6 hours to cover documentation, supervision, and billing. Are you, as Mr. Harris had suggested, are we talking 2 hours of documentation, 2 hours of supervision, and 2 hours of billing?
I'm just saying 6 hours of CEU that include documentation, billing, and supervision, not specific hours to each content area.
Okay.
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 Any other discussion? Should we take a vote? You want to call the vote, Judy?
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to offer a non-disciplinary order to include 6 hours of documentation, supervision, and billing. Courses can be taken online. They will not count towards renewal requirements and must be approved by staff. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
And Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Okay, so moving into 2127.
Kelly, I need to leave the meeting.
Gotta go.
Yep. Okay. Have a great month, everybody.
All right. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Doctor.
I think, do we still have a quorum, Judy, or should we, where are we at? Where are we at as
we
far
do.
As time?
We
frame?
Do.
We do.
Okay, great. 2127 Shiloh Evans PTA. So I know that this was part of Ms. McClellan's initial statement regarding just summarizing the three. I do want to go on record to say, though, that one of the commitments of the board in being consistent is that each case is considered on its own merits. They're not, we don't group cases together and decide as a group on findings. And so I just want to talk about 2127 Shiloh Evans PTA, and some of the evidence in, they're very minimal. I mean, we've got some of the evidence, but as far as her documentation goes, I do want to just bring to the board's attention, I have some concerns about some of the work she did in aquatics, some of the changes in plan of care, poor documentation of discussing anything with a supervising therapist. Her statement stated that she only worked with one patient at a time in the pool but yet build group, as well as individual, changing plan of care to increase lower extremity strengthening, balance activities, things like that that weren't a part of the evaluation process. So my initial thought is to move this to an informal hearing and be able to complete the full investigation on this particular case so that we can take a look at it at its own merits.
I guess, Dr. King, member of the board, I apologize for interrupting, but because Mindy hasn't had an opportunity to complete her investigation, would you be okay with just allowing the investigation to go forward and then, you know, continuing the initial review once you have a full and complete report from Ms. Richardson and then determining the path of the case?
Yes, absolutely. So would that be a motion to continue this as an initial hearing?
Okay. Correct, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's an initial review in order to complete the investigation.
Okay. So I'll make that motion and we can discuss from there. So I move that we move to continue this as an initial review in order to complete a full investigation.
Second.
Any other discussion?
I know this isn't normally the time I would be allowed to speak. I just, on this one, since I didn't give a separate statement to address this concern for Ms. Evans. In this case, she has already given her board interview, which is summarized in the investigative report. And you do have all of the same, since it's the same patient, you have all the same records that you had for Ms. Marker. I just want to put that out there because I'm not sure what other information you were looking to get since she's given her interview. And all the patient records were requested. But since I didn't get to make an initial statement before we jumped into it, I just want to make sure there's a record that I said that.
Thank you. We're still in discussion.
So from the board's perspective, I guess what I'm trying to grapple with is I agree with you, Ms. King. I think there are concerns about the documentation here, but I think there were concerns about all of the documentation of all three of these throughout the case. I mean, that's part of what led us to initiate this investigation, and I'm just kind of trying to think forward to if, given what I know, I'd be interested in anything further than a non-disciplinary order with continuing education, and I'm not sure I see anything that might warrant that at this point.
Yeah.
Is there something specifically that you're concerned about that maybe we can address that maybe we can talk about?
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. So for me, the difference is that the other two were licensed physical therapists. This is a physical therapist assistant. And so is the next case, very different practice processes as far as adding, excluding exercises, changing plans of care goals, and things like that. So for me, that is where the line is drawn between the licensed physical therapists and the physical therapist assistant and practicing within their scope.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes a little bit of so the concern then, Ms. King, is more about these two PTAs practicing outside of scope to some extent.
Correct.
Which would be different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you for addressing that.
Yes, of course. You're welcome.
My only concern with moving in a different direction with this, and again, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this, if maybe I'm not thinking of this the same way, is if the PTAs are practicing outside of their scope, that also falls on the supervising PTs as well. So if we're not taking that into account with the supervising PTs, how would that be consistent taking it into account with the PTA as well?
Well, there's not documentation showing that they discussed the patient each day. Exercises that were done in the pool, the patients came, they got in the pool with the PTA, right? The PTAs did exercises that were not identified in the evaluation as being areas of need. So yes, I mean, the PTs should have known that, but the PTAs should have also known as practitioners that they have to follow the plan of care. And the documentation that I've read so far clearly indicates that it looks as though they're practicing autonomously.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. And there should be that discussion with the supervising PTs. I just, you know, I believe that the PTs would need to be helped.
So I think it gives us a chance if we let Mindy complete her investigation, come back before us as an initial review. We may very well come to that, but I don't know that we have enough information in this expedited investigation to truly make a determination whether we need to take action. Sorry, you froze, Giovanni.
Yeah, sorry. I just got a network is wonky message on here.
So the motion is just to continue it. Let Mindy finish her investigation. Let us review it as we would consistently do in a full investigation and then make a determination at that point.
Okay. And that part I understood. With that continuing, if something else was to be found that involved the PTs, though, would that be something that could be brought back up in a separate case against the PTs now?
Well, we've already adjudicated the original case, Ms. Marker, so it would have to be and we just adjudicated Luke's, so it would have to be somebody else. If I'm looking at, for example, I request a copy of the pool schedule and I pull additional records of other patients, there may be other therapists that are identified in those records.
Yeah. And that was my biggest concern is if all that comes to light and it does involve the PTs that we've already adjudicated. Now, how do we proceed with that if we've already, you know, said that we've already kind of put something in place for them?
Well, and I think that was part of what was adjudicated, it has been a while. But my recollection is that some of the concerns that were raised with Ms. Marker previously were about the supervision and the failure to supervise, and that was a part of that non-disciplinary agreement that we entered into previously. And I think that's, you know, I mean, that's also something that we saw with Mr. Luke just a few minutes ago with Dr. Cornwall's desire to add supervision credits and a requirement for supervision. So I think that has been addressed with the others. The kind of lack of supervision. And so it seems to me that ship may have already sailed.
Yeah. So, and I think that's why I'm kind of the mindset of, I would think moving forward with a similar situation with this would probably be more appropriate. But again, that's my thinking on this, doing, you know, some sort of non-disciplinary action with continuing education in regard to documentation, supervision, and things of that nature.
Any other discussion? No questions? Okay. Judy, do you want to call the vote?
It's been moved and seconded to continue the initial review in order to complete the investigation. Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
No.
Dr. Cornwall?
No.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
No.
Motion fails.
To carry on the discussion, I suppose, I think I agree with Mr. Leone here. I think given what we've previously done and given our review of the records, I think you're right, Ms. King, we need to treat these each as individuals. But I think we have already addressed in this particular case the lack of supervision in each of those cases. And I think that because we have, I think it is appropriate here to move forward with a similar order and order continuing education. So my motion would be that we require 6 hours of continuing education. I don't know, and I hope that some of the professional members could help me with the specifics. What I'd like to see is I would like to see a majority of that 6 hours be on scope of practice, because I actually am concerned that the scope of practice was a big issue here.
And I would second that.
So is there a section or an area? Okay.
Do we have a second?
Yeah, it's not a second.
Okay. I think the 6 hours is good. I think typically a documentation class will include supervision, but scope of practice, that might be more of an ethics or not ethics, but a jurisprudence, require, having to update on jurisprudence or regulations of practice.
That would be a disciplinary action if we did that, right?
If we had them take the exam, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
are the jurisprudence CLEs or not CLEs, CEUs?
No, they're not.
No. Mm-mm.
So what if we keep the 6 hours and that includes topics on supervision, billing, and ethics?
I think that would, given what we've just talked about, I think that would do it.
Okay.
Yeah. I would agree.
Any further discussion? Okay. We'll call the question.
It's been moved and seconded to offer a non-disciplinary order to include 6 hours of continuing education that includes supervision, billing, and ethics. Courses may be taken online. They do not count towards renewal and must be pre-approved by staff. Dr. King.
No.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Dr. King, members of the board, can you just refresh my memory? Was that within 6 months or a year to complete?
I don't think we specified, but I would say we should do it for 12 months the same way that we did with the others.
Thank you.
Josh, would you agree on that, since it was your
Yes, I'd agree. Yeah, 12 months is fine.
And that was discussed in one of the earlier cases, and my mistake to not mention that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then there's just
Mr. Leone, you seconded that motion, correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
No problem.
Then there's just a case 2128, William Johnson, PTA. Again, I want to go on record stating that I think this rises to a different level. I'd like to know more about this particular PTA's practice in the pool, practicing autonomously, similar to the other case. I'd like to have it considered independently of the other three, but open for discussion.
Yeah, having reviewed the transcripts here, I feel the same way I do about the previous case, to be honest with you.
I move that we offer a non-disciplinary board order of continuing education covering topics of documentation, supervision, and ethics to be completed within 12 months.
Second.
And doesn't count for license renewal.
documentation, supervision, and ethics. The other one was supervision, billing, and ethics.
Let's make it. Let's do that one. I'm sorry. I thought I was saying the same thing.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right. Let's call the vote.
It's been moved and seconded to offer a non-disciplinary order to include 6 hours that include. 6 hour continuing education that include supervision, billing, and ethics. Courses may be taken online, does not count towards renewal, must be pre-approved by staff, and should be completed within 12 months. Dr. King?
No.
Dr. Bastillo?
Oh, she's absent.
Oh, sorry. Oops, absent. My mistake. Mr. Downey?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have, okay, so we have item 9G, 2209 James Kreicher, PTA. Mindy, do you want to give us a summary of the case?
This case is Judy's.
This one's me.
Okay, thanks.
I apologize. I actually accidentally shut down my information on it. Let me pull it back up quickly. Thank you. On January 22nd of 2022, staff received a notice of an adverse action filed against James B. Kreicher by the Kentucky Board of Physical Therapy for failure to comply with continuing education requirements. Mr. Kreicher was deficient with respect to the jurisprudence exam, an equivalent of 2 hours and 5 hours of continued competency. The respondent was fined $720. On April 5th, 2022, staff received Mr. Kreicher's written response. His completion certificates were reviewed and found to be deficient in 6 hours of Category A. The 2020 renewal cycle was the first cycle requiring PTAs to demonstrate compliance with continuing competence requirements. Certificate holders are required to complete a minimum of 6 hours Category A and a maximum of 4 hours Category B and or C. Mr. Kreicher was unable to confirm that any of the courses that he supplied, the course documentation, were approved by acceptable approval bodies pursuant to AAC R4-24-402A. Thus, he did not meet the Category A requirements of 6 hours for PTA. Mr. Kreicher was initially certified in Arizona on May 5th, 2016, and the matter is presented for your review and potential action.
Thank you. Is Mr. Kreicher on the call? Okay. So reviewing your notes, Judy, it does seem that this falls under the disciplinary matrix for PTAs for continuing education. So if I'm reading it right, it looks like there were 10 required. He's falling short on 6. You know, which would potentially, so it would be a disciplinary action. So I would make a motion. We can start here for discussion for findings of fact that you did not meet the expectations for continuing education for PTA renewal for 2020. You don't have his thing pulled up to actually give the statutes. Does anybody else have it up?
The statutes in the investigative report were 32, 20, 44, 24, failing to complete continuing education competence requirements as established by the board by rule. and ARS 32-2044-14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representation in violation of this chapter or in the practice of the profession.
So findings of fact would be that he wasn't able to produce evidence that he completed the CEU. So that's a motion. Do you want to do them both, findings of fact and conclusions of law at the same time, like we did a couple of cases ago, or should we do them separately, Mark?
Mr. Harris, you're muted.
Dr. King, members of the board, if you'd like, could just reference the violation and then the materials in the memorandum in support of that violation in one motion, if you're okay with that.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm just trying to find it in my...
And if you'd like to take it in two separate motions, that'll work too, Dr. King.
Okay. No, I think we can do it in one, and then we can discuss. So making a motion for adopting findings of fact and conclusion of law for ARS 32-2044-24, failing to complete continuing education competency requirements as established by the board, as well as ARS 32-2044-14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter in the practice of the profession.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
So given that this is an initial review, my only concern is over section 32-2044-14, making a false or deceptive statement. From his response and his interview, it seems to me like he may have, this was his first renewal, and he may not have been aware. As a public member, I don't know the process, so I would defer to you, Dr. King, and Dr. Cornwall, but if it's anything like the legal continuing education, I can imagine a scenario where he submitted what he thought were 10 credits and had 6 in the wrong category. Is that a believable situation to our professional members here?
For me, it's pretty straightforward. What's category A and what's not? So,
not
to me, it's not very believable.
Some of the gray comes into B and C, but you don't have to have B and C. You can do 100% A.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If that's the case, that resolves my only concern. I know. Since I have not, you know, submitted on the physical therapy, I just wanted to double check on that. So.
Yeah, and I appreciate your comments that you can, you know, PTAs have not been required to have CEUs for very, very long. And so it was a little bit of an interesting discussion early on. But the fact that he attested that he had completed all of his CEUs is required in the renewal. Is where this making misleading, deceptive code comes from. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Should we call a vote, Judy?
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law pursuant to ARS 32-2044-24 and 32-2044-14, and the evidence outlined in the memorandum. Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Lamb?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Motion passes.
So at this point, I'd like to make a motion for a disciplinary order that aligns with the continuing education disciplinary matrix for PTAs. which includes a $125 civil penalty, retaking the Arizona law exam, and 6 hours of ethics CEUs.
And Dr. King, I'm sorry, Dr. King, members of the board, can we just tweak that a little bit to offer him a consent agreement for that? And then if not signed, remand to an informal hearing?
You bet.
Thank you.
Yes. And all of which to be completed, we've been 12 months kind of consistently. So 6 months, 12 months?
I'll say
12 months. I'll say 12 months and y'all can argue with me. We'll arm wrestle over it.
Do we have a second yet?
Yeah, yes, I seconded.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. And Mr. Harris, just a clarification. So then you said offer consent agreement, and if he does not agree, move it to an informal hearing. Is that what you said?
Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is everyone ready to call a vote?
Mm-hmm. It's been moved and seconded to offer a consent agreement in case 2209 James Kreischer PTA aligns with the CE disciplinary matrix to include $125 civil penalty, successful completion of the AZ law exam, and 6 hours of ethics to be completed within 12 months. If the consent agreement is not agreed to, the case will, Mr. Kreischer will be invited to an informal hearing. Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Okay, I think that concludes agenda item number 9. So we're into agenda item number 10, board business reports. Mr. Hoseman's then rescheduled. So Mr. Harris, agenda B1, do you wanna give us a report update?
Sure, just an update. The appeal has been dismissed by the Superior Court, so the matter now is completely closed.
Thank you.
And if anybody has any questions, more than happy to try to answer them.
Thank you for your work on that.
Thank you.
Okay. So then, Judy, do you want to give your executive director's report?
Sure.
Okay.
So we're starting off with the telehealth. At its March 22nd meeting, the board requested a discussion of the telehealth statutes and to be agendized at a future meeting. The statutes included are ARS 36-3601 through ARS 36-3608. For interstate telehealth registration, a registration form is currently available on the board's website, and staff submits a monthly report of registrations and approvals to the Telehealth Advisory Committee on Telehealth Best Practices in compliance with ARS 36-3608. An online registration form is currently in development as part of the e-licensing system. To date, 3 interstate telehealth registrations have been issued, and that is 2 to PTs and 1 to a PTA. 10 interstate telehealth registrations are currently under review. Your board packet included the various statutes, respective of telehealth, as a copy of the updated interstate telehealth registration form. This is presented for your review and discussion, if you have any questions.
Does anyone have any questions for Judy?
So the telehealth registration, it's not necessarily something that is related to current Arizona licensees. It's more for people who are outside Arizona and want to be able to treat within Arizona through telehealth.
Correct. So the statutes were developed to address the practice of telehealth in Arizona. And part of it is one statute specifically designed for those that are out of state that do not have a license to practice in Arizona, who are not compact privileged. They can practice in Arizona. They can practice telehealth in Arizona subject to certain criteria. The criteria is relative of the information that's required of the registration form as well as their practice in general. And those registrations have to be renewed on a yearly basis. And with those renewals, they have to provide a report of the treatment that they've provided in this state in the previous year. So we haven't had anybody, we're only at the very infancy stages of approving these registrations. So we haven't yet had anybody that's come through the renewal process. You know, this is all new. There's some growing pains. There's some, one of these statutes develops the advisory committee. To my knowledge, that committee has not yet been put in place. We are still required to report on a monthly basis, which we do. But the committee on telehealth best practices has not really provided any additional guidance with this. So it's out there and practitioners can practice. In general, a practitioner, if they contact us, because there are questions, as you can imagine, they question whether they can practice into another state, and we advise if any Arizona licensees are crossing state lines, they need to consult the other state to determine what regulations, if any, apply to them.
Okay. So with all this, once they have that telehealth registration, they now, anytime they're treating a patient within Arizona, they fall under all of our other statutes at that point.
Yes.
All right. Perfect.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Harris, but the board does have authority to process any kind of complaints in that arena as well.
That is correct.
Okay. I would be really interested to see a telehealth physical therapy session.
I've actually, you know, it's interesting that you say that, Josh. I've seen a few of them demonstrated, and they really are more, they truly can be more effective than you would think they would be, you know, honestly.
Because at first glance, it does seem like it would be really difficult to do. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've actually got some technology where they can goniometrically measure, like, angles. Like, the patient holds the iPad up to their knee, and it will measure their range of motion for the PT, and they can walk them through their exercises and activity. It's interesting. It was very enlightening. I was like, this is awful. But it actually was, especially for rural people who live where there's like not a PT within 60 miles. It definitely has some benefits to it.
No,
so
I
was with you, but I actually saw some demonstrations that were really quite impressive.
That is good to know, because it does. I mean, there's definitely a very large need in some of the more rural parts.
Yeah, this patient was like in northern North Dakota.
And it's good to know that they're doing something other than just checking.
Yeah.
Them. Yeah.
Where there were like 28 inches of snow outside and needed PT for his total knee replacement. So it was interesting.
I have a telehealth investigation case right now, so you will be looking at it in the next couple of months.
Okay. Interesting. I look forward to it.
Okay.
Sorry, Mindy. Didn't mean to interrupt your executive director report.
No. It was there for the discussion. The board had questions prior. So
yeah.
If there's no additional questions, we can move forward.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next item is the PT compact renewals. So this is specific to compact renewals. So it was recently discovered that PT compact renewal purchases are displayed differently than initial purchases in the Federation's online system. Therefore, the compact privilege renewal purchases completed without successful subsequent AZ law passage were undiscovered during the weekly monitoring that's generally performed by staff. Currently, there are 22 active privilege holders who renewed their AZ compact privilege without accompanying AZ law exam. Since a compact privilege is based on the home state license and that home state license renewal cycle, the range spans. It can be a renewal that's purchased literally after days. The original purchase was made, all the way through multiple renewals, generally in the case where a state has a one-year cycle. It's important to know that all 22 of the active privilege holders in this scenario have taken and passed the AZ law exam at least once. So they completed it as required with respect to their initial purchase. Due to the processing burdens that it would place, we are proposing to the board a drafted letter to help mitigate this issue. And it's been presented for board's consideration. The letter outlines the jurisprudence requirement in this state and warns of potential further action if the AZ law exam is not completed within 30 days of the letter date. That's what the drafted letter indicates, but of course can be changed if the board determines. The one thing to notice is that what we're seeing with this process is we are seeing a diminishing version of this problem coming forward. These 22, for example, when we first understood what was actually going on and how to manipulate the information so we can see the renewals in the OPS system, that number has remained static over several months. And within that time frame, the FSBPT, although we would still indicate that in the eyes of Arizona, we would like additional information placed in there. But the compact has updated their document or their requirements. They have updated their literature. They have updated their website, which brings forth the jurisprudence requirements, not only in Arizona, but in other states as well. Some states require it only at initial. We require it at initial and renewal. But we're seeing fewer cases of those. So as this morning's case with respect to the initial purchase, that particular individual, she turned right around after she made it. She put her cart before her horse and purchased the compact before registering and completing the AZ law. But she did it like the very next day. I think since I've been in this position as interim, we've only had two cases, which is a slowdown from the ones that were occurring previously. And this is reviewed on a weekly basis. And now that we understand the way that the renewals are reported, we can manipulate the information within the system that we're reviewing, and we can check those as well on a weekly basis now that we know to do it. So we have been doing that. So these 22 have remained static since we first made the discovery. And again, the numbers are diminishing. They're not eliminated, unfortunately. That's what we would like to see, but they are diminishing. So the drafted letter is for your review, and I've included a list of the affected privilege holders as well. So if you have any questions about any of that, I'm happy to answer them.
So to clarify, this is on the agenda for review, discussion, and possible action. So potentially we could vote to move forward with your letter that you had drafted, giving this group of people 30 days in which to come into compliance, which would be to take and pass the Arizona jurisprudence exam? And if not, then potential additional board contact. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're suggesting something like that to help make us more nimble when we see these, rather than open a complaint and wait a month or two before anything happens. The goal is to make us nimble, to see the infraction, address it, and try to have it corrected as swiftly as possible. Yeah. So that's
giving them the opportunity to come into compliance and practice legally with the right compact interstate. Okay. Are there any questions from the board for Judy? I think this is a very fair offer to them. It can be very confusing with this whole renewal thing, which is not really a renewal. I'll make a motion that we approve your process of giving these people who find themselves, we find in this situation, a letter indicating the 30 days in which to come into compliance with the compact by taking and passing the jurisprudence exam.
Second that.
I'll second.
I have 2 cents. 2 cents. Is there any discussion or anything you want added to that?
I believe because this is relating to PT contact compact renewals, this would not involve what we talked about earlier about potentially agendizing like disciplinary action for people who don't go through the right process, right?
Yep, spot on. They did it right the first time. They just didn't fully do it correctly in renewing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There was a couple people who had renewed more than once, and so they knew they had to renew every year, every recycle, but then didn't. So I think this is all part of the same problem, that we may be able to handle these 22, but that doesn't mean we won't have any of these renewal mess ups in the future. So at the very least, we need to put the renewal issue on the agenda to come up with a policy that we can live with.
Yeah. Not just for renewals, but for even the initial.
For initial.
For initial and renewals.
Yeah. So I think that would be great to have on the next agenda or an upcoming agenda, I should say, for us to actually put that in place.
So we have a motion and a second. If there's no further discussion, let's take a vote.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded to direct staff to reach out to compact privilege holders renewing without the AZ law exam to advise them to successfully complete the exam within 30 days or face potential additional action by this board. Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall.
No.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Motion passes.
I apologize, everyone. I have to drop off for a meeting. But thank you very much. I'll see you guys next month.
Bye.
Bye, Giovanni.
Bye, Giovanni.
Thank you. I think your next item has review, discuss, and possible action. Do we still have a quorum that we could take action? Okay, thank you.
We have four.
Okay, perfect.
If you want to be done, Kelly, I'll leave.
No! No, Dr. Greer, don't leave.
Thank you, Dr. King.
Welcome, Dr. Greer, and Dr. Burton, and all the doctors on this call. And Dr. Harris.
That's That's better than the mistake I made this morning calling you Ms. King, so I'll take it.
Totally fine.
That's okay. I think I got Ms. Dr. Cornwall with a Mr. Cornwall at one point as well, so my apologies. the next item is with respect to potentially authorizing merit-based incentives for board staff. So pursuant to the Arizona Personnel Systems Administrative Rules R2-5A-402, the Arizona State Board of Physical Therapy has authority to issue spot incentives to staff. The criteria and eligibility for this one-time lump sum incentive is included in your packet. The board is requested to authorize the executive director to approve and award spot incentives at her discretion to qualifying staff members to recognize their performance and achievements over the previous fiscal year. Spot incentives would only be considered if feasible within the budgetary constraints and in accordance with the criteria above. Spot incentive funds must be obligated before June 30th of this year in order to apply.
I'm not sure. I might have missed it when I read over the stuff. How frequent can you do these? Can you give somebody an incentive 3 years in a row?
Well, technically speaking, I suppose you could. It doesn't limit the amount of times, but it does limit the amount of overall in a fiscal budget that can be granted and the amount that can be given to any one individual based on the percentage of their salary. So there's built-in limitations in that sense within a fiscal year.
Okay.
I did some research, and there have been some spot incentives provided. They're not done on a yearly basis. They're not done, without fail. They're exactly that. It's a spot incentive based on some performance requirement or some performance that has gone above and beyond. Mm-hmm. And budgetary constraints do play a part. So it needs to all be looked at as a whole, but based on the time constraint of June 30th, I'm bringing this forth to have you review the ability to even consider something like this should everything fall into place appropriately.
Hey, Dr. Cornwall, it doesn't look like you're eligible. It's 5% of 0 is 0.
Well, I'll have to just live with that.
I move to authorize.
Not much of an incentive, though.
I move to authorize the executive director to issue. What are we calling it? Merit-based incentives or spot bonuses, as set forth by statute, or authorized by law.
Second.
Judy, I only had one kind of discussion question. I know that the little table you gave us said that we're encouraged to like tier the incentive payments. Do you have some kind of a process in place by which to do that, or are we not even big enough to need that?
The size of the agency does kind of come into play. The idea with it is all being consistent and being fair. In all honesty, this is my first swing at any of this kind of stuff. So before doing it, I'll be consulting, not only the people that can verify whether my calculations in the budget are accurate and there's room in the budget for these things, the accuracy of the way to memorialize why a spot incentive would be issued. And in this year, my thought process is that basically, given all of the changes and that have happened over this year and the changes not only to staff in terms of numbers, but the changes in the expertise that is here requiring an entire shift of all hands on deck in order to continue all of the daily actions, plus all of the changes that we're facing at the same time, not only personnel changes, but system changes, platform changes, all of that coming at us. The team has really pulled together. So, but before, again, because my newness of all of this, I'm not in a position where I feel comfortable saying, oh yes, we can do this right here, right now. I would be consulting different agencies, ADOA, payroll, CSB, who pays our bills, all of that to help consult to make sure that this could occur and the right way to do it.
Sounds good.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any other questions for clarification? Okay, let's take a vote.
So moved and seconded to authorize the executive director to issue merit-based incentives to staff as allowed by law and feasible. Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone? Oh, Mr. Leone's absent. My bad. Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Motion passes. And then I was just about to say finally, but not so much just yet. So just a couple of really swift other updates with respect to our website. There's been consistent progress made on our website. We are not yet live, but we anticipate. In fact, I come in every day and check if we're live. We don't have a go live date just yet, but they're working with a lot of agencies, so I anticipate it in the very impending future. We may even be warned about when it will happen, but I'm not going to hold my breath that will actually occur, but it's possible. So look to a new website soon. It will be updated. There'll be a lot of changes. A lot of the content is there. Hopefully it's a little easier to navigate and find, as well as after it does go live, we'll still be tweaking it. There will still be things that will change and be updated, and you know, nothing tells you that you made a mistake somewhere along the lines besides 50 phone calls that say, hey, what's happening too? So we anticipate that there will be some changes after we go live, but hopefully it'll be a good improvement. Any questions about the website before I move on to the next piece? Okay, the data committee report. So there's been some interest by committee members as well as agencies outside of the state that are interested in the data report and what we're doing with it. It's already linked on the new website, which again is going to go live soon. The intent is after the website is available to reach out directly to interested parties such as the PTs and PTA schools, APTA, who of course had a representative on the committee, FSBPT, who of course had a representative on the committee, instruct them where to find the report. We figure that approach is a little more solid than just emailing the report out to all of those individuals. That way they can have access to it at will rather than searching for their affected email. We've already been approached interest from the FSBPT to complete a not complete to participate in a panel discussion on workforce at the LIFE meeting, which is in July. And then committee members, after this meeting, we will likely let them know that if they're interested and choose to pursue additional presentation opportunities with the FSBPT or APTA or further, that they're able to do so. So that is currently our plan with providing the information to DHS. We're in the process of trying to figure out, DHS is a huge agency, trying to figure out who the most appropriate person or department is with something like that. The truth is they are currently going through the rules process to to make these workforce questions an actual rule that the agencies have to then abide by. The list of questions that they're proposing in their rules is much longer than the list of questions they currently are asking. So there will be some change with that, too, as they move forward, as we get further word. So with DHS, we're still investigating how to best approach that piece of it. So any thoughts, questions, concerns?
No, I like the idea of having it centrally located so it's accessible to a variety of people. And I do hope that it's presented or discussed at the LIFE meeting, just because it's, you know, new, something new that we've done here in Arizona. Someone may learn from it. Mm-hmm. Be able to kind of talk through the process of things that went well, the things we might want to do in the future for doing it differently. So I look forward to sharing the amazing work that the committee did and the outcomes from it.
And if you hear that, Rich, I think Kelly just volunteered to participate in the panel discussion as well.
I'm supporting anyone who wants to present at the panel.
That's why I'm staying really quiet.
Smart man.
Okay. All right. So then that brings us to the financials. If there's any questions on that information.
Mm-mm.
Bye, Rich.
Bye, Rich.
Judy, I need to hop off as well. I've got to pick up. I got to do it at 2:30.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
And then licenses, certificates, so future agenda items.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked several times about adding at some point some work for the board to create a disciplinary matrix to address people who attain a combat privilege without actually taking and passing the jurisprudence exam. So at some point we should put that on to actually come up with something to help align our discussions and our actions.
Yeah, I have both of those listed, compact discussions regarding purchase without AZ law and regarding renewal without AZ law.
Mm-hmm. Any other topics the board members want to have on a future agenda at this point? Anything before we adjourn? I'm just, look at us. So grateful you guys hung in there. Like a marathon meeting. I don't know that I've ever had one go this long.
Well done, Dr. Putin.
Oh, the days when we were in person, you'd give us lunch.
My husband asked me this morning, what's the difference between virtual and live? I was like, food. Food is the biggest key. It was food.
I don't know. We gave 3 minutes for food.
And when we used to be in person, this 2 and 3 o'clock was very normal. Right, Josh?
It was. And we took lots of food breaks.
But we got sandwiches.
We did. That was the best part.
It was the best part. And those tamales or tortillas or burritos.
Yes. Veronica would bring us burritos in the morning.
Correct.
And then Karen would get us subs in the afternoons.
Yes.
Or salads.
Yep. It's a thing. All right. Well, now I'm salivating, so I got to go eat. I make a motion that we adjourn this meeting.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adjourn. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
The meeting is adjourned at 2:22, and we will stop the recording.